Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll have a year-end review discussion with the director of the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, get some information on building healthy military communities, and check in with the Command Sergeant Major of the Minnesota National Guard. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
As the cold of Minnesota's winter sets in, please take the time to prepare yourself and your family for a safe and enjoyable season. First, as you plan your winter travels, know before you go. Check on current weather warnings and always plan for extra time on the roads. Also, be sure to prepare an emergency survival kit for your vehicle. Next, dress for the cold and know the signs of frostbite. On some of our coldest days, cold weather injuries like gray, waxy, numb, frostbite-affected skin, or even hypothermia can set in quickly. Finally, at home, be sure to check your carbon monoxide detectors. Without its warnings, a broken furnace can quietly lead to tragic consequences. Whether you are one of our airmen or soldiers, part of our family, or part of our larger Minnesota community, we wish you and yours a happy and safe winter season.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me in the studio today is Director Patrick Kelly, who is a retired U.S. Navy captain and became the director of the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System in June 2013. Captain, welcome back to the studio.
Tom, thank you. Great to be back with you.
Bet you haven't been directed or addressed as captain for a while. It's been Director Kelly.
Probably last time I saw you was the last time I was addressed as captain.
Well, sir, you spent, I understand, about 28 years in the United States Navy.
Yeah, I came in, I'm from Mankato, came in the Navy in 1983. Served until October of 2011, and as in the predictably great number of duty stations the Navy has to offer. So I had 13 different duty stations and had a great Navy career.
Sir, I'm looking at a list of some of those, and there are hospitals all over the country, and you were even deployed in Operation Iraqi Freedom.
You know, the great thing about being in the military, I miss it a lot, but, you know, is the opportunity to do a lot of different things, maintain your grade, maintain your standing in your service, but, you know, serve overseas, serve at the Pentagon, serve in hospitals, serve in an operational environment. So it's one of the things that I really liked about the Navy and miss a lot, but it was a good career. I'd do it all over again if I had the chance.
Sir, it looks like your whole United States Navy career set you up to be in the position you're in now as director of the Minneapolis VA Hospital, and you were director down in Sioux Falls before that.
Yeah, so the kind of work that I did in the Navy was, I was a hospital administrator, a medical service corps officer, and it wasn't a big stretch for me to come to work for the VA because, again, the veterans we treat, a little older, a little different cohort of veterans.
Here we are, Vietnam vets too.
But it's still veterans, and that's one of the pleasures of the job is working with military people and veterans. That and while I miss being in the military, it's really a pleasure to continue to work with veterans.
And sir, you joined us, I think, shortly after you came to the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, so that we could tell a lot of stories about all the great work that's going on out at the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System here at the medical center and at the community-based centers that you have all over the state. And you've got some marvelous people out there that we've had on the show.
Yeah, so we, you know, going back my 5 years, you know, a lot of things have happened over the course of those 5 years in the VA and at the Minneapolis VA, and, you know, new clinics, a lot of turnover in staff, but one of the strengths of the Minneapolis VA is that we have a lot of long-serving, very dedicated doctors and nurses and administrators and others who have made it their life work to work with veterans and to work in the VA. So that's the kind of continuity that has really made a difference, and I think it distinguishes us. You know, the Minnesota workforce is unlike any other workforce. You know, to have Minnesotans to pull from to be part of your service, of your organization, to include many, many veterans, it's a real blessing to have that as your workforce.
We're speaking with Director Patrick Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System on Minnesota Military Radio. And Director, it's fun to talk to you every 4 weeks or so, but it seems like I've been teasing you about wearing a hard hat for all of the years that I've known you out there. You've had one construction project after another to improve that hospital.
Yeah. Well, you know, our hospital was built in 1988 originally and is one of the newer hospitals in the VA inventory. But like any large facility, we require a lot of upkeep. And so we've spent a lot of money maintaining the place, but at the same time, you know, we have built a lot of new things out there, and while the VA has not had a lot of money for new, large, standalone hospitals, our budget for improvements and facility upgrades has been pretty significant. And so some of them are very visible, our brand new parking ramp. Others not so visible, but equally important, large operating rooms where we can do more types of procedures and surgeries that support veterans.
And the new clinics.
The new clinics. I mean, it's been good over the last 5 years. Our budget has been good for upgrades and renovations within the walls of our facility. It's been good.
And Director, one of the things we've been talking about on the show for the last 8 years or so is the incredible number of women who serve in the military. And a lot of them are retiring now, getting out. And you've done a lot of work to completely rebuild and revamp and expand the women's clinic.
Yeah, so it's important to our women veterans that they have a place where they feel safe and where it's secure and that they're treated with respect. And so we've made it our effort, not only in Minneapolis, but at our 13 clinics, to have a separate and standalone women's clinic where women feel comfortable. In many, many cases, they're treated by women providers, or they're treated by providers who have undergone some training in women's health care so that they can feel comfortable with that provider. And we have a large new renovation project. It's actually a new construction project at our facility that's going to happen within 3 years, where we're building a brand new standalone women's clinic. You know, the number of women veterans keeps growing, and it's going to grow more. And so, again, this is just the next thing in making sure women veterans are getting all the services that they deserve through the VA.
And, Director, we've learned that if the women are the least bit uncomfortable, that they'll meet them at the front door and show them right into the clinic and make sure they are taken care of.
Well, for those of you who've been to the Minneapolis VA, you know, we have this group of Red Vest volunteers who are second to none, and we have 150 of them, and we have 1,500 volunteers total. And that's their work. I mean, their work is to make sure that our veterans get to where they're going, and particularly sensitive to the needs of women veterans, getting them to that right clinic, getting them the care that they need, making sure they're comfortable and that they're and that we're taking good care of them.
Sir, we've seen a lot of things in the news over the past years about some VA clinics or medical centers around the nation that have some trouble, and people, and the veterans have trouble getting appointments. I haven't experienced that at all at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. How are we doing here in Minnesota?
So we are better than average, but I'm not satisfied with where we are. So if we look at sort of globally and thinking about primary care, specialty care, surgery, those kinds of clinics, and mental health, we are very, very solid in mental health. You know, we've always exceeded the national average significantly in the area of mental health. Primary care, we're about at average, and many of our specialty care services are better than average, with some exceptions. I mean, there are some areas where, through provider shortages or issues with related to facilities, we've had to buy the care in the community because we just haven't had the capacity to meet those needs. But, you know, we are committed to primary care, mental health. If veterans need to be seen, we will see them that day when they need to be seen.
And the other thing we've learned, sir, is you've got a great partnership with the University of Minnesota.
Yeah, many of our physicians, most of our physicians, are on staff at the University of Minnesota. So a big part of our work is training. So a lot of the medical students, a lot of the residents, a lot of the fellows come to the VA for their training. 70% of the doctors in the United States have been trained by the VA. So we both bring physicians over. They do cases at the Minneapolis VA. Our doctors do care at the Minneapolis VA, and so it's good for training, but it's also good for us to have that collaborative relationship because they have some specialty services that, quite frankly, we can't afford to buy, but they will come over to the VA and do cases because it enhances the training for our students, and it's better for our veterans.
Great partnership. And, sir, I think every time I talk to you, I ask you this question. Are you hiring?
Always hiring.
Need some nurses, need doctors, need all kinds of people.
You know, we have about 1,100 nurses that work for us and about 450 doctors. But we are always hiring, particularly in our community-based clinics. In the metro area, it's a little bit easier. But any doctors, nurses who are looking for work, pharmacists, therapists, we are happy to talk to you over at the Minneapolis VA because you know, we employ about 4,500 people and there's a lot of turnover.
And how many community-based clinics do you have now?
13.
All over Minnesota, and I think one over in Wisconsin, is that?
Actually, we have ranging in Minnesota from Albert Lea in the south up to Ely in the north, and four in western Wisconsin. Twin Ports up by Duluth, Hayward, Rice Lake, and Chippewa Falls. So, yeah, we've got 13 total, four in Wisconsin, 9 in Minnesota.
So for all our listeners all over Minnesota, if you're interested in working for a great organization, just go to the Minneapolis VA, look it up online and apply. You might find a job in one of those community-based outpatient clinics. Director, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about 2019 and what's coming up in the future. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today to retired U.S. Navy Captain Pat Kelly, who is the director of the Minneapolis VA healthcare system. And, sir, I wanted to just talk a little bit about, for all our veterans that might be listening across Minnesota, if they have an issue that they think is related to their time in service, time in the military, a health issue or there's some kind of disability, how do they become eligible to get treatment at the at your outpatient clinics and at the hospital?
Good question, Tom. So eligibility is complicated in the VA, regrettably. I wish it was a little bit simpler, but there is one sort of simple thing that I would recommend. All 87 counties in Minnesota have a county veteran service officer. I would say if you don't know your county veteran service officer, he or she is the right person to know. And many counties, like Hennepin, have a large number of county veteran service officers. They are experts at understanding benefits, eligibility. Veterans can always walk into the medical center, or they can always go over to the Bishop Whipple building over at Fort Snelling. But I think the easiest thing, you can, one of two things, see your county veteran service officer or see a veteran service organization representative, you know, the Legion, VFW, Veterans, Vietnam Veterans of America, DAV, they all understand VA benefits and can be good allies for veterans who are wondering about what they might rate through the VA.
So find your discharge certificate and go see your county veteran service officer or your local veteran service organization. They can help you get started, but the county veteran service officers know all of the resources available for anything that was veteran related. So that's a really good place to start. Sir, how many, every time we talk, or once in a while we talk, the number of eligible veterans that come to the Minneapolis VA has been increasing each year.
We're pretty flat right now. I mean, we have for the last several years increased. We have 103,000 veterans who are enrolled to get their health care in one of our hospitals or clinics. And it's really important to us, Tom, because our budget is based largely on the number of veterans that we take care of. And so I always try to dispel the myth that we need to leave room for the sicker veterans to get their care through the VA. Any veteran who thinks that they're eligible, I hope they get their care from us. One, we provide good care. It helps us with our budget, and then we can take better care of more veterans the more veterans we see.
So go see your county veteran service officer.
See your CVSO.
Sir, one of the things I know that our new VA Secretary, Robert Wilkie, is focusing on is suicide prevention, and we do several shows each year on that. And the one thing that strikes me from those shows is, if you have a veteran, if you are a veteran, if you know a veteran, and it looks like something has changed and they're depressed and there's something wrong, ask them about it. Get them to the hospital. You know how to help them.
You know, I think the data has gotten pretty clear on that. People frequently are afraid or they're worried about asking, or you're not confronting someone. You're really helping them. So if you come in touch with somebody who you think might need help, encourage them to get that help. I mean, we see a number of veterans who have suicidal ideation or who need help, but there are way too many veterans who we don't see who have those same needs. And so to the extent that, you know, beyond the Yellow Ribbon, service organizations, county veteran service officer, just another veteran, if you see someone who you think needs help, get them to us. We need to get them the help that they need, and we need their help in doing so.
So ask the question, are you having any problems? Are you depressed? Are you thinking about suicide? You're going to be glad you did if they're having the problem, because then you can get them some help and you can save them.
Yeah, a lot of times people, they just don't know what to do, where to turn. And so if you open up that opportunity for them, you can make a difference.
Sir, I wanted to ask you about the VA Mission Act that passed Congress and was signed by the president. Can you give us an update on that?
Yeah, so the Mission Act was passed June 7th of last year, and just a couple of things that are in the Mission Act that are going to matter to listeners. You know, one, it's consolidating a lot of community care programs into one. It's going to simplify things, and that'll make it easier for veterans to understand what they rate. It's going to establish that veterans can get a couple of community clinic walk-in visits over the course of a year, rather than driving into a Minneapolis or another emergency room. They're going to rate for those that are enrolled to go into a community clinic. And think about like the CVS care or some sort of service like that. So that'll be helpful for urgent care type needs. And significantly for those that are caregivers. You know, the original caregiving legislation was for post 9/11 veterans and their caregivers. This new legislation opens up the caregiver program to all eras of veterans. And so there's a lot of veterans, Vietnam-era veterans, their families, and others who spend a lot of time, resources, energy, effort, money taking care of their veteran. And so this program is intended to extend that to provide stipends to them so that they can be, in some small way, reimbursed for the care that they're providing their loved ones. So that's a significant part of the act.
So once again, they can either contact you at the VA Medical Center or they can talk to probably their county veteran service officer and they'll have the information on this.
I would recommend that.
We're speaking with Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System on Minnesota Military Radio. Director, I know you work closely with the veteran service organizations, but one of them in particular, the Disabled American Veterans of Minnesota, they've provided vans all over the state to help get your veterans to their medical appointments.
Yeah, it's
what a resource.
It's heroic what they do. And not in Minnesota and in my previous job in South Dakota, they covered every single county in the state. And so DAV, they really do a terrific job in partnering to get veterans to our place. Many, many veterans just can't get there. So DAV knows who they are. And if veterans need help, they need transportation help, contact us, contact their DAV. They'll make arrangements to get you there.
There's vans all over the state, and they're expanding that project and putting more in place every year. So either contact the davmn.org or call your county veteran service officer or call the VA. Sir, as I indicated in the last segment, I've been teasing you about that hard hat you've been wearing. Are there more projects coming up for 2019?
So we have a couple of significant projects going on, one of which is we are completely renovating our mental health services. So, you know, the mental health demands have really increased over the course of the last several years, and in part because we're identifying more veterans who have the need. And so we are a large facility, but we only have 24 inpatient mental health beds, and we're expanding that. So we're going to expand it to 30. We're going to create some additional space in our emergency department where we can accommodate veterans with mental health needs, where we have difficulty admitting them because the demand has exceeded the supply in our state. And it's not a veterans problem. It's a state problem. And so to the extent that we're expanding our spaces, we'll be good for veterans. We're also doing, we're converting all of our beds to single beds, all of our rooms to single bedrooms. That's really the standard of care in hospitals now. And so some veterans like sharing a room, most don't. And so we're converting to single bed rooms for our veterans. And then just a lot of improvements sort of everywhere, some of which are major and you're going to be seeing. Others are just sort of making sure that the air conditioning continues to work and the floors are still solid.
Sir, I know you have another resource out at the Minneapolis VA Hospital. You've got some great chaplains out there, too.
Yeah, we have probably a dozen or so chaplains, and recognizing that the spiritual component of care is equally important to the physical, emotional, psychological. So, you know, we have a number of services throughout the day, and we have chaplains who are visiting 24/7. So it's something that we think is important, and we have a great chaplain service at the VA.
Sir, we've got about 2 minutes left. What do you see as the biggest challenges coming up in the near term and long term?
Well, I think implementing the Mission Act is going to be a big challenge for us in the next year. You know, by June 6th, the Secretary has to decide what the new access standards are going to be. So that's going to determine how much care is provided in the VA, how much care is bought in the community. And that's going to be a big deal for us. And you know, I know that most veterans want to be seen in the VA, and we want to make that possible. But at the same time, we want to make sure that veterans have access to care where they live. And so balancing that is going to be a challenge for us in this next year. I want to mention veteran suicide because it remains the number one priority for the Secretary and for us. And so we have a lot of things going on to reduce veteran suicide, to include outreach. And so 20 veterans a day is just, we're not doing good enough. We need to do better than that. And so we have a lot of good community partners. But I think, you know, to the extent that we can tackle that problem more effectively, we've hired a bunch of new staff. We've hired 4 new staff specifically, and much of that is related to outreach, getting out there in the communities. But, you know, we need to do better with that. And then finally, Tom, I'll just mention that, you know, recruiting doctors and nurses, particularly in some of the rural areas of our state, is always a challenge for us. And to the extent that, you know, we have difficulty getting providers in those remote locations, it makes it more challenging for us to give veterans the care that they need. So there's some provisions in the new law for things that we can do for debt reduction, for education, and other things that we're using to entice medical workers to work for the VA. And so, again, as you had previously mentioned, and I'm very grateful for this, always check us out. We're a good place to work.
Call the VA Medical Center and find a good job either at the Medical Center or one of the outpatient clinics. Director, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about building healthy military communities. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a few moments, we're going to talk about family programs and building healthy military communities. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Shelletow.
Here at Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, we continue to prepare for the upcoming legislative session. Last year's session helped the department reposition itself in order to better serve Minnesota's veterans and their families. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is a unique state agency because of our nonpartisan nature. It is important now, more than ever, to focus on our mission and what we need to do as a department to educate our state leaders. Doing so will allow us to work together to assist Minnesota's heroes. As a country and as a state, we have made certain commitments to our veterans. It's important that we keep good on these promises. To stay up to date on both federal and state legislative updates during the session, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelletow. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now from the Minnesota National Guard is Captain Adam Gaddis, and he's brought with him a guest, Tiffany Kowaleski. To both of you, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Captain, I want to start with you. You've been on the show before, I think about a year ago, and you're back now today to talk about Director of Family Programs. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and what you do?
Hey, yeah. So, well, thanks for having me on again. I really appreciate it. But give you a background about myself. So I'm currently serving as the Interim Director of Family Programs. I've been in the National Guard for 13 years now. Wow, it's gone by fast. But I joined the Guard as, you know, 18-year-old, fresh out of high school. And I thought it was going to be one part adventure, one part pay for college. But it turned into an adventure, and more so than I thought it was going to be.
And you're still here and you're going to stay for a while.
I'm still here and I'm going to stay for a while. But yeah, I never thought I'd make the military a career. And I went to college and grad school, you know, kind of more of in a human services type field. And then I was lucky enough to get kind of several opportunities in my career where I was kind of bridging that gap between doing human services type stuff, but for the military. And that landed me here over in family programs. So it's been a great wild ride the last year that I've been around. So,
Captain, we're going to talk about that in a minute, but we also have Tiffany Kowaleski with us. Tiffany, you were here about 2 years ago, and we were talking about the Medal of Honor and some things, events going on in town. Now you're back, and you're talking about Minnesota State Coordinator for the Building Healthy Military Communities. What in the world happened?
Well, the convention came and gone and everyone survived and it was fantastic. And then I needed to find a new job.
And Annette Kuiper had something to do with this.
Yes, the wonderful Annette Kuiper. Love her dearly. She approached me one day and she said, "Oh my gosh, Tiffany, you should apply for the state coordinator position for building healthy military communities." And I said, "What's that?" And I'll tell you a little bit more.
All right, we're going to get to that. Let's go back to family programs. Captain, I understand that you advise the Adjutant General on issues concerning soldiers' quality of life, life skills, and their family readiness while providing training, resourcing, referral, follow-up, and youth development for service members within the state. That's kind of a big description, isn't it?
Oh, yes, yes, Tom. I have quite the number of programs underneath my umbrella, and it gets to be a handful. And just like children, you know, you love every one of them. There's never enough time for each one of them, especially when you got nine of them. So
we should click through a few of those, but I know Family Assistance Centers is one of them.
Yes, yes. So Family Assistance Centers, they are our primary triage point for any service member who's wanting anything that they need. So they start off right with our FAC. You give them a call anywhere, any time of day, and you can get service from them.
Well, that's really important to our Red Bulls who are over in Coit, because if their families need something, they get some kind of emergency, they get a hold of Nancy Launderville and the Family Assistance Centers, and they're there to help.
Absolutely, 24/7. And then you also have underneath my umbrella the other nine programs. I have Military One Source also. So any place you have a phone or you can have access to online, you can go to the Military One Source website, get access to any kind of resource that you might need. I also oversee Family Readiness Support Assistance, and they help all of our Family Readiness Group volunteers. Our child and youth programs hold several events during the year, including we have Month of Military Child in every April at Mall of America, which is a huge event.
Purple up.
Purple up, yep. And our reintegration program, which resources service members during the deployment cycle, many events during the year. We also have Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, which I'll maybe talk about a little bit later, but that's our community engagement and support program. Building Healthy Military Communities, who is here with me today.
So, Tiffany, do you work with the captain?
I do. Yes, I. Yep, we walk out of the Cottage Grove Armory.
And how does this all fit together?
So we have all of these great contractors that we each have our own program, and Captain Goddess oversees all of us. So he's more there for us as a great conduit into the military community. And he's a great leader with all the contracts, making sure if we need anything or need any help or any type of facilitation, he helps us out.
So do you work closely with the Yellow Ribbon communities then in building healthy military communities?
Yep. I work close with all of the contracts within family programs, along with public partner, private entities, all different kinds of resources, veteran resources, military resources, you name it. BHMC is kind of the basket, and I collect them all and put them all in, and we all work together.
Yeah, I think it's great. You know, as the director of family programs, I got nine different, you know, fires to keep burning at that all at the same time. And really, you know, they each have their own separate little roles, and making them all be integrated so that we can have a holistic, you know, view of soldiers and their families and provide holistic support to soldiers and their families. I think that's one of my biggest challenges as a director is to get all those different efforts moving in the same direction. And Tiffany's efforts as building healthy military communities is really taking that even one step further.
So we're talking about the Minnesota National Guard's family programs on Minnesota Military Radio. And Captain Annette Kuiper is one of our producers, and we have on Yellow Ribbon entities, Yellow Ribbon communities, Yellow Ribbon companies all the time. But I understand that she's handed off the Yellow Ribbon communities to you as under family programs. And did you have to add three people to do her job?
I sure did, Tom. And we could hire five more, and it still wouldn't be enough. So, and I think, yeah, probably last year when you had me on last is when we were just talking about, hey, we're going to make this transition. And we were a little nervous about how that transition would go. And I think it's going smoothly. I got these three new staff that I'm trying to get trained, and they're trying to get out into the communities and teach, coach, and mentor, you know, Yellow Ribbon volunteers throughout the communities and really reinvigorate a lot of the communities. You know, the program's been around for so long now. We can definitely see that it's an awesome program. It's been doing great things over the last 10 years. But we've seen a little bit of volunteer burnout, little people that, you know, it's time for them to move on, do something else. You know, 10 years is a long time. So it's just reinvigorating some of those people and some of those communities who have maybe started to lose momentum, but still lots of great things going on in the community.
Captain, we've been on the air for about almost 9 years now. And at the beginning of the radio program, we had a lot of deployments, a lot of soldiers deployed, a lot of airmen going out, and it kind of settled down a little bit, but it looks like we're back in the part of the cycle. We've got a lot of people, a lot of soldiers and airmen out this year, and the Adjutant General told us last week there's more going out next year and more the next year. So it's a really good time to reinvigorate those Yellow Ribbon communities to support those families while we have people deployed to Kuwait and other places around the world.
I absolutely, I can agree with you more, Tom. And, you know, we're trying to target certain communities to make that happen. And it's unbelievable, really, the amount of community support that is out there. I mean, you compare that to the Vietnam generation, you know, where service members were spat on, you know, and called baby killers and murderers when they came home. Compare it to now where there's parades, right, you know, from our communities when they come home. So,
Captain, yeah. that was a difficult, different time. I was a Vietnam veteran. I think there was a hangover after World War II in Korea, and society was changing. They had hippies, all kinds of things. We lived through it. We made it through it.
Yep.
And I think my fellow Vietnam veterans are instrumental in making sure that that never happens again.
Absolutely.
And here in Minnesota, there's a lot of organizations out there helping the families and helping take care of all your fellow Red Bulls soldiers while they're gone. So I think that's healthy, and I think it's a great thing. And most of my fellow Vietnam veterans are proud to be part of our generation to have changed that whole part of society.
Well, thanks for your service, Tom.
Thanks, Captain. We don't hear that very often. Tiffany, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about building healthy military communities. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been speaking with Captain Adam Gottes about the Minnesota State Family Programs and also Tiffany Kowaleski about building healthy military communities. And Tiffany, we've just got a few minutes left in this segment, but what is it? What is building healthy military communities?
Well, Tom, we are really fortunate to be Minnesotans because we're part of a 7-state pilot. And the pilot for building healthy military communities, can I say BHMC or do I have to say building healthy military communities each time?
Well, I think we've said it full out many times already.
So we can say BHMC.
This time we can do that.
I thank you. So BHMC aims to better understand and address the unique readiness and well-being challenges faced by geographically dispersed service members and their families. You know, we don't have an active duty base here in Minnesota, so every single service member, whether you're in the reserve component, reserve guard, or active duty, everyone is considered geographically dispersed here in Minnesota. But the Minnesota National Guard has done such a phenomenal job at building the foundational blocks of supporting our service members, which includes the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program. But my position here as the state coordinator for BHMC, I align with key community partners to address the military needs. So I kind of put a military lens on their current initiatives. And we do this by basing it off of the total force fitness model. We call it the TFF, taking care of them mind, body, and soul, ultimately improving the health and well-being of the service members and their families. And I keep saying families because this is extremely important to make sure that we're taking care of the total family unit that will impact their relationships, readiness, recruitment, and resiliency by the end of 2020.
So how do you find service members or the families that need some help?
So that's a great segue into kind of what we did back in May 2018. About 15 people flew in from DOD, Department of Defense, OSD, Office of the Secretary of Defense, NGB, National Guard Bureau, and CHAMP, the Consortium of Health and Military Performance. They all flew in, and we did about 100 interviews in the four regions of focus, which is Duluth, Camp Ripley, Twin Cities, and the Rochester area. And so interviewing those 100 key partners, we heard from them of what the needs were. We weren't telling them what the needs were. And it came back with three lines of effort. The first one is with readiness. So making sure that we're taking care of them with their dental, their mental health, their physical health to build up readiness. The second line of effort is to increase retention with military parents. We have a lot of family here. Everyone has a lot of kids. So What is hard, though, is we don't have all the childcare needs, whether it be credible or affordable. So especially during those times of drills, annual training, mobilization, and deployments. And what you had asked for the third line of effort is the increase of awareness of resources. You don't know what you don't know, and that goes on both sides. So that's either service members or the resources. One thing that's really interesting is that we have a very heavy veteran-focused of resources. Well, service members might not necessarily identify as a veteran. So we need to make sure that all the resources that we're articulating who they really are for, because we have so many fantastic ones here in the state. And in order to do that, by increasing our community integration, we'll be able to involve our key community partners as well.
Thank you, Tiffany. Captain, you've got another firecracker on your hands. Her and Annette and everybody out there, Nancy Launderville, they're all doing a great job. You've got a lot of people to help.
I sure do. Yeah, it's a constant battle to make sure that everybody knows the resources so that they're out there. Like Tiffany says, like education about those resources and engaging people to make sure that they're informed about them is so key. And, we just want to shout at the top of our lungs, family assistance centers, and county veteran service officers, that's where you need to go. And we hope to see you there. Follow us on Facebook, Minnesota Family Programs, or visit us at Beyond the Yellow Ribbon online.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio, and Happy New Year.
Well, thanks, Tom. It's great to be here, and Happy New Year to you, and looking forward to kicking off 2019. It's going to be another great year for the Minnesota National Guard.
Another big year, and we had our year in review with the Adjutant General last week, and there's a lot coming up, a lot going on. And today he opened up the show talking about winter safety, and I know that you wanted to talk about personal readiness.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important, of course, to maintain awareness, especially in a winter time. So winter safety is important, as the Adjutant General already mentioned. You know, it's the simple things like being prepared for that cold weather and, understanding how the car reacts a little bit different on the road during driving in the wintertime, of course. But, I want to focus on just wellness of the force this time around. It's a new year, and so it can be time to start for the new you. And I don't mean you in particular. I mean all of us. And that means just kind of getting on track with reaching some of those goals that many of us try to set each new year, whether it's eating better, so nutrition, getting our minds prepared for the year ahead. So mental wellness is important. And for the Minnesota National Guard, all of that leads to our primary goal, which is to maintain personal readiness. Because as you know, we've talked before, Tom, without personal readiness, we don't have the soldiers and airmen ready and available to answer that call when it might come in from our nation, from our state or local authorities. So wellness of the force is extremely important.
And Sergeant Major, if they get ahead of that and do a good job of it, they won't have any problem with the Army Combat Fitness Test.
Yeah, you're right. I'm glad that you mentioned that. It should be advertised pretty well right now throughout the Army. This is a change that's coming, as a matter of fact, in fiscal 19, which is the year we're in right now, fiscal year. It's in what's called the testing year. So they've piloted and are continuing to pilot the actual fitness program, and they'll start fully implementing it in FY20, so next year. And then the Army Combat Fitness Test, or ACFT, becomes the actual test of record in FY21. And the significant thing about this is, we talk about traditionally doing our push-ups and our sit-ups and then going for a two-mile run. Well, that test is being replaced by the Army Combat Fitness Test, and it'll go from those three events now to six events. And, there's no better time than right now as we start this new year for our soldiers to start getting prepared to take that test and get familiar with those six events that are going to make up the actual Army Combat Fitness Test.
Sergeant Major, I can hear you right now. Down for 20. I'll try that on Sergeant Johnny and see how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. What's interesting, and this will be the first time we've done this that I'm aware of, is the test itself is both age and gender neutral. And why that's significant is when we deploy, you know what? It doesn't matter what your age is or what your gender is. You've got to be able to perform in that battlefield. And that's what this new test is designed to do, is to help predict a soldier's readiness for that demand of our modern battlefield. So age and gender neutral. And, of course, we've talked about combat positions open to our females. And this is just another step towards making sure that all of our soldiers, regardless of gender and age, can do all the things that we demand of them or require of them.
Sergeant Major, we got about a minute left, but one of the things we've talked about for years is diversity in the force. And we've got a special holiday coming up. MLK Day is January 21st.
Yeah, it sure is. And, that's always a great event. And, of course, we recognize as we go into Black History Month as well. And that's a great opportunity for us as the Minnesota Guard to get involved with our community, recognize that particular day, that holiday. And, with any luck this year, we'll be able to participate in the annual Martin Luther King breakfast as well, which is always a very, very good and well-attended event.
Sergeant Major, I know you're out of town traveling again, and I appreciate your calling in for the show. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I would just like to say, it is a new year, and we can start making those changes or those things that we wish we would have done last year. We've got a whole year ahead of us. Let's not procrastinate. Let's get after it. And I just wish you and all of the listening audience a great 2019, and I look forward to talking to you in the very near future.
Thank you, Sergeant Major.
All right, take care, Tom. Thank you.
That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Director Patrick Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, Captain Adam Gottes, Tiffany Kovaleski, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Shelleteau, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we discuss the year just passed with the Minnesota Patriot Guard and check in with the Veterans Voices program. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.